You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of The Logan.
Jimmy, I'm just going to say it. I got to let you go.
You were just fired.
I was let go for liability reasons involving insurance.
The one-armed bartender.
You need to show a little respect.
Charlotte Motor Speedway. I know how they move the money.
The only guy who knows anything about blowing up real bank vaults is Joe Bang.
I am incarcerated.
Yeah, we got a plan to get you out.
Coca-Cola 600 is the biggest race of the year.
We need a computer whiz.
I know everything there is to know about computers, okay?
Do you?
All the Twitters, I know them.
Welcome to the Coca-Cola 600.
Now, how many yards away is the vault?
20 yards. I don't know, maybe 30.
Is it 20 or is it 30? We are dealing with science here.
All right, everybody, you were just listening to the trailer for Logan Lucky, and the story is as follows. The Logans are a hardscrabble family from the hills of West Virginia, and their clan has been famous for its bad luck for nearly 90 years. But the conniving Jimmy Logan decides it's time to turn the family's luck around, and with the help from his friends, the redneck robbers, he plans to steal $14 million from the Charlotte Motor Speedway. The film is starring Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, Seth MacFarlane, Riley Keough, Katie Holmes, Katherine Waterston, Dwight Yoakam, and James Bond himself, Daniel Craig. It is written and directed, well, actually, no, Steven Soderbergh directed it. The writer is actually Rebecca Blunt, which, by the way, this is my guest for this podcast here, and I'm going to ask him a question right out of the gate. This is Matthew Gerrell, who's a brand new writer to Next Best Picture. This is his first podcast with us. How are you, Matthew?
Doing very well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast. I look forward to it.
Absolutely. The question I have for you is Rebecca Blunt a pseudonym for Steven Soderbergh? Do you know?
Well, so what I've read is that there's a lot of different guesses. I've read that she is an actual real person and that several of the actors talk to her. She lives in England, supposedly. But then there's a lot of people who speculate that it's Soderbergh himself. There's some people who speculate that it's his wife. But given the style of this movie, especially certain elements that would be spoilery to mention, it reminds me a lot of the Ocean's movies, and so I'm thinking it's probably Soderbergh himself.
Yeah, it's really, really tough to say, and I did a lot of research myself, and I was getting conflicting messages, too. So that's my first thing for the listeners out there. If you guys can help clarify this for us, I would really appreciate it. But for the sake of this review, if we refer to the script at all, I think we're going to just say Rebecca Blunt, basically, and we'll be as blunt as we can about it.
I see what you did there.
I make really crummy jokes on the podcast, by the way. You're going to have to get used to it. So, Matthew, and that's what I'm going to refer to you as. You're Matthew, I'm Matt, or you can call me Negs, whatever you prefer. Matthew, though, what are your thoughts on Logan Lucky?
I think in general, this was a really good film. I think it takes the talents of a lot of its lead actors with Channing Tatum and Adam Driver and Daniel Craig. It gives them fantastic chemistry together, gives them a lot of comedic scenes together. It's what I call the redneck inversion of the Ocean's movies, because this isn't any glitzy, high style sort of movie. This is down and dirty, backcountry rednecks trying to pull off a heist. And to me, it comes together in just this a really fun heist movie.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's even a point in the movie itself where there is like a television news reporter and they refer to this as Ocean's 7-Eleven.
I caught that. I was like, huh, I see what you did there, Soderbergh.
It's so meta. It's ridiculous. And, you know, Steven Soderbergh, we all thought he was done, or at least, well, some of us thought he was done. There were some of us who think that he's just pulling a Daniel Day-Lewis, like, you know, I'm out of the game, and then they just pull him right back in, Al Pacino style. And he goes away, he does some television projects, he does Behind the Candelabra, he does The Nick. The Nick is now unfortunately canceled, But it seems to me that the Nick kind of revitalized that creative spark within Soderbergh, and now he's back to making feature-length films again. And he's also, from what I've read, it seems like he had a lot more control over this movie, not in terms of how it was actually made, but also how it's being distributed. Like, he wanted to not open this film in New York or in LA. He wanted this movie to open only exclusively, like, in the Midwest, because this is kind of like his love letter to the South and to the Midwest and those types of communities, in a way. In that vein, it reminded me very much of something like Fargo, where it's like he's poking fun, but not being disrespectful or anything like that. Like, he's capturing the realism of the types of people that live in these communities, how they interact with each other, how they speak. And it's funny. You know, there are some really ridiculous moments of dialogue that just ring very true. And, you know, the whole movie has, like, kind of this, like, light breeze to it. But it's never at any time, for me at least, I didn't find it disrespectful. Like, he was making fun of these types of people in a malicious sort of way. And that also is given evidence because Steven Soderbergh is actually from the South. If I remember correctly, I think he's originally from North Carolina. I think that's where he was born. Now, I could be wrong on that, but I know that he was born in that area. So I love that this is kind of like him doing what is, for me, almost like a Coen Brothers style film.
I do see that comparison. That Fargo is one that definitely comes to mind. While not a movie, I'm also reminded a little bit of The Dukes of Hazzard.
Nice.
Just this goofy and silly Southern style, good old boys having fun sort of movie. And I mean, especially in the stuff with Tatum and Driver and Craig, it's just, it's raucous, but it's not, as you said, it's not disrespectful. It really pays tribute to these people. And I also think the inclusion of the John Denver song throughout with from Country Road, to me, that is another way that it pays tribute. I mean, it's the main character's favorite song. His daughter uses it in a pageant that she's in towards the end of the film. So, yeah, I totally see how it tries to infuse this DNA of Southern good old boy style without becoming too preachy or too pokes too much fun at it or anything like that.
Yeah, and it is a good old boy style because you have to look at it from the standpoint of when this movie starts off. Channing Tatum and Adam Driver, they're not criminals. They're not bad people. But Channing Tatum, you know, he's divorced. He's got his daughter. He wants to be able to provide for her. He sees that Katie Holmes is not so much threatening, but just, you know, due to circumstances in life, is going to be moving away with her, and he wants to create a better life for himself and for his daughter. And so he comes up with this elaborate scheme that, you know, one of the things that kind of bothered me a little bit was, did you feel that, like, this whole scheme that they came up with to rip off the NASCAR Motor Speedway thing, did you think that this was, like, a little unrealistic that somebody could come up with this idea?
I mean, yeah, in a way, but then at the same time, okay, he did the Oceans movies. Those are also elaborate, like, realistically even more elaborate and ridiculous, and yet yeah, we buy into it. So you do kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, but I think it succeeds well enough in that because of just how goofy and stupid it is that it works.
Yeah. You know, and you have Adam Driver, who is less charismatic. He's been kind of brought down by two tours in Iraq. He's got a prosthetic arm, which they find many opportunities to poke fun at. But I thought that he gave a very quiet and reserved performance. And out of everybody in the movie, in terms of, like, the dramatic side of things, because this is not really a heavy movie. This isn't, like, a dramatic film. This is through and through a comedy. But I thought Adam Driver gave probably the most layered performance out of everybody. Do you agree?
I think so. I think he, as you said, he gets a quiet, sort of reserved performance, and he's not some flashy, out there character like we've seen in some of his past movies. And I think it does add a certain level of grace to the movie in that respect, especially when you contrast it with some of the live wire characters that they interact with. I mean, particularly Daniel Craig's brothers in these movies, they're just, oh, good grief.
I got all the Twitter accounts. I know all of them. That line is so, so funny. Those guys are hysterical in this movie.
I adore them.
And also Seth MacFarlane, too. He could come off as very grating to so many people, and I thought that he was very, very, very over the top in this movie, where it actually served him well, because there's never a moment where I forget that is Seth MacFarlane, but he just is so pompous and so arrogant, and it works. It actually works here.
So I'm going to actually disagree with that. I found him grating and annoying, and it's because of the accent, honestly. I mean, you can tell he's faking it. You can tell it's not real. You can tell that it's Seth MacFarlane through and through and through. And while I don't exactly hate the man, and he is creative, that character just annoyed me so much.
Yeah. Okay. And that's fair. That's a fair thing to say, at least. I mean, his character doesn't overstay his welcome within the film, at least. Hilary Swank does make an appearance in this movie as a FBI agent who's on the tails of the robbers towards the end of this film. Did you feel that it was a little odd to cast a well-known actor in such a small role so late in the game?
I absolutely think Hilary Swank was underutilized, and the performance is certainly fine, but that character I feel like either should have had more to do or cut somewhere else to give her more room, because at the end it just kind of feels tacked on and she doesn't really get a whole lot to do. And I actually feel the same way about Katie Holmes and Catherine Waterston, to be frank. I mean, they're fine, but I don't feel like there's enough meat there for them to really make much of it. But I mean,
you know who gets a lot of meat though? Riley Keough is awesome in this.
Yes.
She is just continuing to keep on impressing me in almost everything that she does lately. And she's becoming, I think, one of our best actresses. If she continues this level of work and continuing to work with these directors that she's been choosing to work with in all these different projects, she's somebody who I could very well see getting her first Academy Award nomination very, very soon.
I would hope so. I mean, I didn't really recognize her before I saw her in American Honey last year, but I know that she's worked with Soderbergh before, so that certainly helped her. And yeah, I've been very impressed by everything she's done so far, so I could see her certainly getting some sort of Academy nomination, whether it's leading actress or supporting. She seems to be more in the supporting roles right now, so I'd be curious to see if she stays more in that vein or if she is able to get some projects and move more into a lead, but that's definitely something going forward to look for.
Yeah, definitely. I really, really liked what she was doing in this. It was a little hard for me to tell initially, speaking when the movie first started, if she was Channing Tatum's like new girlfriend, but it turns out that she actually is the sister of the Channing Tatum and Adam Driver character, the Logans, you know. Which, by the way, every time I reference this movie, like on my computer all the time, and I type in Logan, before I type in Lucky, it thinks I'm like referencing Logan from earlier this year.
Of course.
A little side note on that. But in any event, though, I really, really liked the dynamic that she has with the two brothers, how she's integral to the plot itself. And she's not a side character that does get cast away, kind of like the other ones that do. They feel a little tacked on in some places. But she looks like she's having a blast. Everyone looks like they're having a blast. But no one looks to be having as much fun as Daniel Craig is in this movie. Oh my God, this is great, because it's a reminder to all of us once again that he's not just James Bond. If you think back to his roles before he played Bond, he was a very, very dynamic character actor. And we see a bit of that come out here again. And also, too, with an accent that is just so, so, so convincing, I found that, you know, there was a time before I saw the film where, just based on the trailer, I thought to myself, man, this guy could really get, like, a Best Supporting Actor nomination at Golden Globes or something, just based on what I'm seeing here in the trailer. Now that I've seen the film, I don't think so as much, but man, oh man, it does not take away from what he's doing here. The guy is just hysterical.
Oh yeah, he's absolutely dynamite from his first scene. I mean, coming dynamite in, having conversations with
It's and a pun on his name.
That was
Joe
completely
Bang.
Unintentional, I promise you. Well, so that's the other thing. His name is Joe Bang, and I swear I thought that the Bang part of his name was actually just a pun because he's the explosives guy, but apparently that's actually his last name, I guess. So
yep,
I'm like,
yep.
Huh, well, that's interesting. But yeah, he's electric, he's fun. He bounces back and forth off of Adam Driver and off of Channing Tatum so perfectly. I liked his little interactions with Riley Keough as well, especially when they're in the car driving together. And he's just
I'm getting naked.
Getting naked. So no peeking. I say no peeking.
Yeah, no, he's phenomenal in this. He really is. Everybody looks like they're just having a blast, and that really comes through in the film's vibe and overall tone. It's a very fun time at the movies, much like the Ocean's 11 films were. And some people have complained that this isn't thoughtful Steven Soderbergh. This isn't dramatic Soderbergh. This isn't Soderbergh reinventing himself. This is actually Soderbergh instead taking something that he's done before and just simply applying it to a different demographic. And as a result of that, some people were let down by the lack of originality in this film. But I disagree. I found that there was plenty to like in this movie, and it gives credence to the fact that you can take an old and worn story and just slightly tweak it a little bit, and it suddenly feels new again.
I completely agree. I mean, it's not the most inventive or original thing I've ever seen, especially because it's a heist movie and they're as old as dirt. But yeah, as long as you can infuse it with fun and interesting characters and put them in a scenario that is interesting and fun to watch, then you typically forget about the fact that you're watching something that's been done a million times before.
Yeah. And sometimes I complain about that in certain movies. I really do. I think that sometimes I see a movie and the storytelling is predictable. You know, an example of this is I just saw Patty Cakes recently, which was a film I enjoyed overall. But I found the beats within that movie to be a little too predictable. And as a result of it, I kind of got a little, I don't want to say bored or nothing like that, but I was not as engaged with it as I felt like I could have been. This movie, on the other hand, though, does have a lot of things working for it that help to overcome that in many ways. So much so that even the visuals in this movie, you know, this isn't necessarily like a movie that's going to get a Best Cinematography nomination, but shot on the red camera, this film looks so sharp and so vivid in terms of its colors that I love the photography in this movie, especially when they get to the Speedway and you're seeing like the stadium and the people and just the colors, man. Steven Soderbergh has always experimented with different types of film, and he's been a huge proponent for HD since it first came out. And I don't think he's ever had a film that might have looked this good in HD as he does with Logan Lucky here.
I completely agree. I mean, you can tell that he has been a cinematographer before. He clearly has a cinematographer's eye, and just watching the images that he's able to capture, the movement of the camera, and just everything that you get in that frame, and it is captivating, even if it is something like, okay, getting a close-up of a gate that's moving back and forth, or there's a scene where they're playing horseshoes with toilet seats, and you get a close-up of that, and it works.
Absolutely, absolutely. Soundtrack, too, is really fun as well.
Yes.
Soundtrack in this is got a lot of really, really great, unique tunes that you don't hear overused in other movies before or come off as, like, cliche. I'm looking at you, Atomic Blonde. I thought the soundtrack use in this was very unique and helped to give the film a dynamic flavor as well. The other thing I wanted to touch upon in regards to this movie here was the ending. The ending itself. Without getting into spoilers, were you satisfied by how this movie ended?
Overall, yes. It sort of comes out of nowhere.
It does, right? I felt like it did.
So the only reason why I'm more or less willing to give it a pass is because this is not the first time that Steven Soderbergh has done this sort of thing, because he did the exact same thing in the Ocean's movies where something unexpected happens and then you get a reveal that explains it all and all that. So
right, we get it like through this like edited montage where we're seeing scenes like replay, but from a different perspective, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, everything's coming together, and we have like this whole new light on the movie all of a sudden.
Exactly. It's not bad, I don't think, but it does feel a little random and out of nowhere, unless you're willing to forgive it, because, again, Soderbergh has done this before.
Yep.
But that's just me.
Yep. Okay, cool. Let's talk about final thoughts. Great out of 10, Oscar potential. Anything that you want to add on to this movie here, Matthew? I was about to call you Matt. I got to get in the habit of calling you Matthew. Anything you want to talk about for Logan Lucky?
I guess the only other thing is, so one of the peeves that I have in a lot of movies is child actors, because there's just so many of them that are so poor, and I get that they're children, but okay, you're still an actor and you still have to put in a good performance. Farrah McKenzie playing Channing Tatum's daughter in this movie is so adorable and sweet that I loved her in that. So a little minor thing, but she has a spot, and the Country Road song at the end, I also I think just worked, because it ties the film together with how Channing Tatum's trying to get this money to be able to provide for his family, and particularly his daughter, and to get that moment together, I think really added a level of poignancy to it.
Well, I'd like it too, because she's going to sing a Rihanna song. I think she's going to sing Umbrella, it was, and it's a very mainstream song that all of America has heard before, but instead she chooses to sing a song that is something that's more personal, close and dear to the people of that area, and really like is cemented in the roots of that community. That I felt that was a really, really good way for Soderbergh to kind of bring a level of what's the word I'm looking for here? Like the thematic part of the story and the themes that he was really, really trying to touch upon, and how there's great pride that these people take in their lifestyle, basically, and also in their community. And I really thought that he did that very, very well in terms of how sweet it was, and also to how much it moved the Channing Tatum character in that ending as well. While this isn't like a dramatic, like heavy film in any sort of way, like the film doesn't take like a sudden left turn and become like super dark or anything like that, I thought that was a very, very, very nice way to add just a little bit of something on top of the film's light comedy that helped to bring everything around and make it a full experience.
I completely agree.
Nice. Very nice. Final thoughts from me. I gotta bring it up. I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. Huge. Massive. Biggest fan that I know, personally.
Your Twitter feed would indicate otherwise. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. this film has a Game of Thrones joke, or a Song of Ice and Fire joke, rather, that plays out for, what, like 2 minutes? It's, like, not a short, like, throwaway line. Like, this is, like, a whole gag. And it had me in stitches, rolling in the aisles, crying hysterically. I nearly vomited from how much I was laughing. And everybody else in my theater was completely silent. Like, nobody understood the joke.
Fail.
And it killed me. It killed me. But, oh, my God, I loved it for that reason alone. And I have to say, on a personal level, it almost maybe bumped the film's grade up one full point, because I just was so, so, so in love with the fact that he took something that was very topical, very cultural in terms of the real world of today, and something that people are really, really heavily invested in. And he just found a way to just throw it into the movie. Whether Soderbergh is a fan of the show or of the book series or not is irrelevant. I thought it was just so over the top and so ridiculous that it definitely, definitely worked for me in such a huge, huge way. It's by far my favorite part of the movie for personal reasons.
Fair enough.
Okay, cool. So now, grade out of 10. I don't know if you understand how the rating systems necessarily work here, but let me run it by you really quickly. Essentially, we go by genre. So if we're reviewing a horror film, a 10 out of 10 would be something like The Exorcist, you know, or if we're reviewing a drama, maybe a 10 out of 10 for you would be Casablanca. I don't know. But we're talking like 10 out of 10 is like masterpiece. You are established as a classic at that point. So this being, you know, and you don't have to get like too specific with the genre. This is like, you know, you don't want to say like the hick heist comedy genre. You don't have to get that specific with it. But in terms of how other movies have done this before, mainly even the Ocean's 11 movies, on a rating of 10, how would this stack up for you?
For me, it's an 8 out of 10. I don't think it reinvents the heist genre enough to move past that. But at the same time, the characters are so good and the comedy is so on point that I was thoroughly invested from moment one to the end. It's a very solid effort from Soderbergh, and the ensemble cast is really good, so 8 out of 10 for me.
I give it an 8 out of 10 as well. I think it's one of the best films of the year in terms of just what you get from it as far as comedy, a good time. If you're looking for something that's going to be extremely entertaining and present to you just a really, really solid time at the movies where you walk out with a smile on your face, Logan Lucky will definitely have that for you. It's not forcing anything down your throat in terms of politics, in terms of religion. The film doesn't take any dark, wild turns or anything of that sort. You go in, you know what you're getting, and you absolutely get it because you're in the hands of a master with Steven Soderbergh. So an 8 out of 10 from me. And finally, Matthew, Oscar potential. Any Oscar potential whatsoever?
I can't necessarily say that there's much of a chance. Comedies are movies that generally don't get a whole lot of Oscar buzz in general. So I personally don't think so. I mean, if anything, you might get something like a supporting actor nomination for Daniel Craig. But even then, I don't think it's going to work out in terms of any sort of Oscar love for this, even though I could support it because, yeah, it's a good movie and it's really fun. But in terms of what the Oscars look for, I just don't see it.
You know, in terms of the Daniel Craig mention, the only thing that would resemble something like this would be, in recent memory, Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder. A comedic performance of that sort that gets a lot of buzz and notoriety that somehow manages to make it all throughout the season. And also because the category is extremely weak. Now, we're like, what, 2 weeks away from Oscar season officially kicking into high gear here. We'll know in a couple months' time how weak the field is looking. But as of this moment right now, today, Daniel Craig gets into my lineup. I mean, I'd put him in. And there is a chance that that could last all the way till the end of the year. But the chances of that are extremely slim, regardless of which. So I don't necessarily see it happening either. But I'm not ruling it out just yet. Because if they're looking for somebody to kind of fill that fifth slot in there, that would be a nice place. Because Daniel Craig has never gotten an Oscar nomination. And this might be his best chance this year. I'm keeping it open. But I'm telling you right now, it's like a less than 10% chance. So realistically, no, zero Oscar potential, not even screenplay, unfortunately. There's going to be a lot more stronger films that come along this year. And unfortunately, this film will be forgotten about come award season time. But that does not take away from the fact that it is still one of the best films of the year. And it is a very entertaining time at the movies. So there you go. Okay, Matthew Jarrell. Question for you, sir. Where can they find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at NovaMG7. I'm also, as you mentioned before, a recent new contributor to Next Best Pictures, so you can occasionally find some of my reviews there. This weekend we're recording, I'm dropping a review of Menasha, so that'll be up sometime this weekend, and that's me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and reviewing this film with me. I really do appreciate it. The listeners certainly appreciate it. The level of insight and the contributions that you make to the conversation are one that I really appreciate very, very much so. So thank you so much for your debut here on the Next Best Picture Podcast. Speaking of which, everybody, you can subscribe to the Next Best Picture Podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, and CastBox. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. We would certainly appreciate it. I am Matt Neglia. You can find me at Next Best Picture on all of the social media, and we will see you all next time.